All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Authentic Agent Podcast. My guest today is going to be Dalton Davis. He's the director of sales at BTG Real Estate. Thanks for coming in, Dalton.
Yeah, welcome. Thanks for having me, man.
Welcome
appreciate
to the
it.
Authentic Agent Podcast Man Cave.
It's a lot fancier than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, that's right. Right. It's, I mean, it's smaller than you thought it was going
to
be, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think we can relate to that, though.
That's right. So yeah. I wanted to bring Dalton in today because, well, for a couple of things. One, your story is really fun. I like your story, and I've gotten to ride with you on this journey basically from day one. I mean, maybe even day, you know, negative one, if we really go back to the very first time that you interviewed. But before we get started, I want to give a couple shout outs. You know, we're coming from the Lister Pro Studio here in Tempe, so shout out to Lister Pros. And then a big, big supporter of ours here at the Authentic Agent LLC and also at the BTG Real Estate is Magnus Title, Angela Kiernan. Big shout out to Angela, probably one of the most pure hustlers in the game out there when it comes to title.
Absolutely.
Man, she's just pure effort and heart, and we certainly love our relationship with her. So thanks to Magnus Title and Angela Kiernan for helping us put on our shows. So Dalton, I want to get right to it, man.
Uh-oh.
You've got a nickname in our business, don't you?
A little bit.
Yeah, yeah. So for those of you who don't know Dalton, and I'm sure for some of our team members who are listening, I can't even remember when this happened, but we started calling you all caps Dalton years ago. How the heck did that happen?
It's gotten me in trouble a few times too along the way. No, it's definitely it wasn't always that way. I definitely wasn't always all caps Dalton, and I think part of the nickname that why I got that was I would walk around the office, and I wouldn't talk in a normal voice. It'd be all caps, and I think that was something that I started doing to make myself feel a little bit better and a little bit more confident, and just kind of carried over, and I'm always the loudest guy in the office. I don't know about the loudest guy in the office anymore, but I'm definitely up there.
You're getting a run for the money, but
absolutely.
That's because there's a lot of people in the office. They drowned you out a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That was fun to watch you go through that progression, though, and we're going to get into your story a little bit, and we're going to tie it into all kinds of conversations about lead generation, but you just mentioned you certainly did not start that way.
Absolutely.
You started as a very shy, reserved, very intimidated agent, and listen, like most people do, right? I mean, what I just described in those three words is probably 99% of agents when they get in and go, wait a minute, you mean I gotta communicate with people?
I gotta meet people in person and be on the phone?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
that's not what HGTV told me. Like, Facebook just looks like all I'm supposed to do is get my Lamborghini and then deals come to me.
Oh my gosh, show three houses, they pick one, and that's it.
Yeah, this is easy.
Interior design advice.
But yeah, so for those of you who are wondering, if you haven't figured out like what all caps Dalton means yet, is just like Dalton's loud. Like, and I like that because I kind of felt like at some point or another something switched for you and you were like, listen, I'm gonna project this confidence. Like, I'm here, I'm worthy, I'm talented, I've built this skill. I'm gonna project this because, you know, this was your thing. And I love
Absolutely.
Watching you walk around, and you'd leave our office and go out into the brokerage, and it's just like, I mean, wherever you are, we can hear you.
Yeah.
But one of my favorite things about being able to hear you no matter wherever you were is you were constantly setting an example. You were constantly on the phone, and you weren't afraid of letting people hear you. And I think that a lot of times we go through this like progression of fear when we start down the lead generation journey, and that the first one is just so much self-doubt, right?
Yeah.
And you certainly experienced a great deal of that, and we'll come back to it.
Absolutely.
But then you go from self-doubt, and you go into this kind of this fear stage where you're afraid of calling people, and you make up all kinds of excuses. But somewhere along that journey, as long as you're willing to push through, you start to find your identity, and you start to find the value of you know what you're doing and how you're communicating. And you settle into a groove.
Yep.
And I think that for the most part, you know, most agents fail because they can't push through those beginning stages and understand that they're part of the journey. And I mean, let's talk about how you started. I mean,
it depends how far back you want to go. Is it the beginning of lead generation, or is that first interview you and I had?
Why don't we go to the first interview? I mean, because there's a big gap between that and when we circled back
Absolutely.
And decided to partner up. But
yeah,
tell us how that went.
So I was still at ASU, young buck, and part of my term was that I needed to go get an internship, and like all kids. It's like, hey, this will be fun. This will be easy. I'll just go do real estate, you know, show three houses, you pick one. It's everything it's sought out on TV. So I was good friends with Kyle at the time, and I had come in and sat down with you guys, and that interview didn't seem to go so well. And it's not that you guys were asking me difficult questions. If for some of you guys that haven't met Brandon, when you first sit down with Brandon, Brandon's a little bit of an intimidating guy, and he doesn't do it on purpose. Like, we joke about how you used to sit in open houses. You would literally sit in open houses because you standing up, you notice people are like, this guy's kind of intimidating, right? But we had that first interview, and you were asking me simple questions like, what kind of hobbies do you have? What degree are you in? And I was like, ah. You know, snowboarding, and it was just like one thing went to worse, and it was just like, okay, well, that didn't go so good, and we ended up not working together. I think it went, was that full year or so? I continued to, complete my courses, and then at that time, you had started your own company, and Kyle had started working with you, and at that time, it was just you two, right? I completed my courses and reached back out, because I'm very resilient. And I think that's kind of, a little bit more about my story, but, you guys at that time, I don't think had any other choice than to say yes to bring me on.
Well, I don't think it was exactly that way. So I'll round it out from my perspective is, I think that it's good to highlight this as you came in, and I think that we've always joked about this for now 5 or 6 years or however long it's been since that moment. Most people have no idea, you know, when you come in and you sit down for an interview, and they just don't have any idea how an interview could go, right? Yeah. They want it to be super structured, and they want to project themselves to be whatever version that they think the person sitting across from them wants them to be.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you lose throughout that process is you lose your entire self-identity and the authentic parts of you that make you you.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, especially in the real estate industry, we're looking to see who can be their most authentic self, right? Because oftentimes that most authentic person that's in there is the foundation in which we're going to recognize, is this person going to make it or not, right?
Well, and it's funny you bring that up, because I remember going to that interview. What you kind of think about real estate agents is, you know, fancy cars and fancy clothes and this and that. I remember I showed up and I was wearing like a Burberry dress shirt. I was wearing dress pants. I was wearing a really nice belt, leather Oxfords. And I show up to an interview, and you and Kyle are in polos. And I was like, oh, man.
Looking,
it's like
so
someone showed up in a tuxedo
to
like a casual event. So I was like, this isn't going so good so far.
Yeah, and I think that there's some traditional aspects of what people think interviews are supposed to look like. I think those have changed now with the emergence of tech companies and the way that they've changed culture and the way that we're creating community and culture inside of businesses now. I think it's less about like this projected idea of what your appearance is. Although, I mean, appearance is still a factor here. Like, let's face it. I mean, human nature is to judge, you know, especially the first thing we judge everybody on is appearance. So I'm not saying that there's nothing there, but things have changed a little bit.
Yeah.
And especially throughout the interview process and how much we've put forth in identifying talent and understanding how difficult it is to identify talent. You put some of that on the back burner and you start looking for the things that really, really matter.
Yeah.
Going back to that interview, you say, and I get this a lot, I've heard this a lot, and I know I never identify with the idea that I'm intimidating, but I think what I am is I'm very serious and I'm very passionate.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't particularly love to have conversations with other people who aren't very serious and very passionate, because that's the energy vibration that I'm on. And when I come in contact with somebody who's not on that energy vibration, I have a tendency to kind of like, I don't know, this sounds rude, but I have a tendency to kind of not want to be in that conversation.
Yeah, zone it out a little bit. Absolutely.
Yeah, like, this is like, I'm just not vibrating on the same frequency as that. And, you know, I think with a lot of times I'm that way with people who have victim mentalities, or, you know, I'm very much a believer that we got to take responsibility for creating our own results.
Absolutely.
And the results that we have in our life are a direct reflection of, you know, our habits and rituals and the things that we've committed to. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes when you're coming out of college, you have no idea. You're not even self-aware enough to even get your mind to that level, right?
Absolutely.
So when you sit in front of somebody who has committed a certain amount of their time, energy, and effort to developing that part of themselves, whether it's personally or professionally, they've committed to some growth in those areas.
Yeah.
And it can be intimidating if you have not explored that aspect of yourself.
Absolutely. Yet. And I think it's funny you bring that up because I talk about that first interview we had, and the questions were very, very simple.
So I was lobbing you softballs.
Right. Like, yeah, like, man. Yeah. I struck out.
Fact, you had a wiffle ball bat. And I
was it was on a tee and everything. And yeah, no, it's funny because the questions you were asking me were very, very simple, right? But sometimes we come into the business or interviews and we have these expectations that I had rehearsed all these different things on how I was going to answer these questions. And then you're asking me stuff like that. And it's like, wait a second. And I remember when we had the second interview, like a year later, where we sat down and you had asked me, why are you getting into this business? And I was like, you know, I think it's great. I want to help people and I want to do this and I want to do that.
You had all the typical answers.
Absolutely.
That everybody
comes to the table with. I want to make
$100,000
my first
yeah.
year.
Everybody says, I want to help people. But the reality of it is they want to make money and they want
Absolutely.
To do it easily.
And I remember I asked that question. You said, okay, why do you really want to be in this business?
Yeah.
Said, okay, I want to make money, right?
Yeah.
And how much money do you want to make? And just like anyone that starts in the business,
you throw
some
that,
reason,
you throw that $100,000.
That $100,000 always, right?
Yeah.
And I think once we had that conversation, my wall started to break down a little bit, and I think that's up until the next point when we actually had to start lead generating for business.
Yeah.
But I think that was kind of a funny sequence of starting into the business, because when you're going through these courses, they teach you everything about real estate that you're not going to use. They pretty much teach you how to stay out of trouble, but they don't teach you how to sell real estate, how to manage real estate, and even the contract portion of it.
You get absolutely zero understanding of the business of real estate.
Scary.
There's a business going on. Yeah, all the time. And I love the saying that people are attracted to the real estate industry by the perceived income opportunity, and they're driven out by the reality of the competition for it.
One of my favorite things that one of our agents on our team told me, and I only heard this probably like 2 years ago, real estate is a business where there is absolutely no ceiling on what you can make, but there's absolutely no floor, right?
Yeah.
And it's so true. Like you see people go and they close 6 deals in a month, and then the next month, it's zero.
And the next year, it's zero.
Right? It's scary.
Well, and to piggyback on the idea that there's no floor in real estate, I don't think people understand what we're saying when we say there's no floor in real estate. You can come into real estate with a certain amount of money in savings, let's say zero credit card debt, and you get into real estate and you leave it, or it spits you out
Absolutely.
A year later,
and
it spits you out with $10,000-$15,000 in credit card debt and no money in your savings, and that's what we mean by no floor.
Yeah, more often it's not that there's no floor. You usually start in the basement, because when you're starting in real estate, there's. It seems like everybody has their hand out for some sort of money. It's definitely a tough business, and everybody paints it as butterflies. And yes, you could definitely go make that $100,000, and then you get out there, and it's like you're thrown to the wolves, and it's, what am I doing? What did I get myself into? I've already spent all this money. What's next, right?
This is not what I expected, right? And we've talked about this a lot on the podcast and our classes when we talk about it in the business, is understanding the business that you're in. Be aware of all of the things that happen in the real estate industry. So, know that it's very obvious that the classes and the schools and the trainings and all of that, like, it's everywhere. And yet it is not impacting the failure rate.
Yeah.
At all.
Mm-mm.
It's not impacting the failure rate. So what you've got to be able to do, what any person's got to be able to do, is come into the situation and go, okay, I've got a ton of resources. Some of those resources are exceptional, and some of them are garbage.
Absolutely.
How do I identify the difference? And how do I get myself to a point where I'm self-aware enough to accept that the responsibility is mine?
Yep.
I have to own my own level of participation. Mm-hmm. And like anything else in life, if you want to be successful in any area of your life, it is not going to be convenient.
Nope.
It is not going to be comfortable. And if you need those things, or you believe that convenience and comfort is a part of your journey to success in real estate, then you very well could be one of those people that leave the industry, get spit out with a bunch of debt and your savings gone.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, you could go join Planet Fitness where it's the no judgment zone, or you can go hire a personal trainer. And I think that when you're getting into the business, you think, okay, which brokerage am I going to go work with? Who am I going to interview? And honestly, most of those brokerages, they'll hire anyone that can fog a mirror and has a pulse, right?
But they say, we want to hire
right?
you. The words they use make you feel oh my gosh, these people really want me.
I got three offers on the table.
Oh my goodness.
And it's one of those things. It's, you know, when you find the right brokerage and you find the right team, if that's something you're interested in, that's like finding a personal trainer, right? Those are people that are going to hold you accountable and kind of show you the proven path where if you join with, you know, a random brokerage, they're just going to have some stuff put together and hopefully you're going to figure it out. Right?
Yeah, it's kind of a one-stop shop type of thing. It's like where everybody's the same, follow the system, do these bare minimum things. Mm-hmm. And listen, it's not impacting the failure rate at all. So I think it doesn't mean that it doesn't have value. All those things have value, but you know, we always use this saying that education without implementation is just entertainment. Mm-hmm. And that's what agents get wrapped up in doing, is just going to class after class after class after class, you know, hoping that the next class is going to be where they finally discover the easy button. And it just never comes, and they just get lost in this education cycle, and they never actually get themselves committed to taking any fundamental action in the areas that they have to do. Mm-hmm. They'll take action in other areas that are easy and comfortable and fun, social media, right? Mm-hmm. But they won't take the critical action pieces and owning the level of communication that's necessary to start generating sales pipelines and build business and earn trust and confidence in the individuals that you eventually want to work with. That's hard. It takes a strategy. It takes a system. It takes a mentor. It takes a coach. We talk about this all the time. Like, some of the most elite business people in real estate or in our industries nationwide all agree that your first hire, if you're a real estate person, you're hiring somebody or you're paying for specific leverage. But whatever that is, whether you're hiring or you're paying, that first hire or that first money that you invest in leverage should be around coaching and accountability. Mm-hmm. Those are the two areas that if you don't master those two things, then everything else that you grow from there is going to be built on a sand lot.
Yeah,
and not a strong foundation. Mm-mm. And it becomes very, very difficult for people. And they get caught up in the idea because they're in real estate school. They're bored as heck listening to whatever class that they're in. Mm-hmm. And they sit in there and they're doing 3% calculations of all kinds of different numbers, right?
Calculate 3% of anything,
calculate,
right?
Calculate 3% of anything.
Yeah.
And they get in their head somehow the idea that that 3% is just theirs for all time. I've never made 3% of anything. Because leverage has always been more important.
Absolutely.
Coaching, systems, accountability, strategy, leverage, marketing, all of these things, transaction help, listing help. There's a plethora of things that are necessary to leverage agents into production. And they just cannot give up the idea that, well, then I won't make 3%.
Right.
And it's just like, my goodness, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're counting money that, one, doesn't exist, and then you're trying to hold on to money that doesn't exist into the future. It's just like, this is a fantasy.
Right, yeah, and I think that's the whole thing. Whether, you know, the split is, you know, 40%, 50%, 60%, 70%, that percentage is still a lot more than 0% of nothing, right? And I think that people get so wrapped up in the idea that, I mean, and this was something that I struggled with, and we'll obviously talk about a lot of my struggles here today, was, you know, the showing assistant piece. I mean, I can't remember the last time I actually took a handful of buyers out in a certain setting and was showing in the evening and on the weekend and this. I leverage that stuff out because I know my time is more important generating for new business, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something where you quickly realized it as well, is you want to hire not to your strengths, but to your weaknesses. And that's where, you know, admin comes in for most real estate agents, because most of us are very unorganized. We're not good at time blocking. We're not good at paperwork. And we
details,
constantly
consistency,
need to be
this
filling
can go
that.
On and on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. And it's one of those things. The one piece that we, it needs to be a strength, like we don't really have an option, is your lead generation. I mean, that should be your sole focus. And I think it's funny, after Gary Keller came out with that book, The One Thing, everybody's one thing was lead generation. Mm-hmm. Half of those people actually weren't lead generating. And I think it's, you know, you go and you teach a class and people come up and are talking to you, Brandon, I'm new in the business. What's one thing you think I should be doing to go and get business? And your answer is always the same thing. Mm-hmm. And what is that?
It's open houses.
Yeah. Right.
But there's more to it. I mean, that's the easiest phrase. Yeah. And so let's tie that in and graduate this conversation into the lead generation conversation. Lead generation has become this like scary phrase, right? And that's partially the industry's fault, because industry leaders have pushed the narrative of what lead generation should look like. And sometimes there's an ebb and flow to like what's working out in the real estate industry. Mm-hmm. And over the past years, we really took a sharp left turn into cold calling and this, and being an animal on the phone and being an assassin converter. And, you know, we almost took this weird step back into the Boiler Room, Wolf of Wall Street 80s.
Glengarry Glen Ross, yeah,
like,
ABC.
What was that? I mean, fundamentally what we are is a relationship based business. Mm-hmm. And we took a 5-year hiatus from that in the industry and really got into that kind of sales tech. Now, listen, not everybody did. We didn't. You know, mm-hmm. we focused on relationships and what we call staying in the influential zone if you're a 7L fan. But we've really done a disservice in pushing this narrative of what lead generation is. Is lead generation cold calling? Yes, absolutely. Is calling FSBOs and expireds lead generation?
Absolutely.
Also, yes, right? Is door knocking lead mm-hmm. generation? Yes. Open houses, obviously. Listen, so is database. So is client events and networking events. What lead generation really is to me is a commitment to communication. That's it. Whatever that communication strategy is, it's a commitment to doing it with great consistency. Mm-hmm. That's what lead generation is to me. What is your lever? Like Kyle and I talked about levers on the last podcast. Yeah. Levers in lead generation. Open house is a lever. FSBOs is a lever. Cancels is a door knocking's a lever. Like, any specific strategy, that's a lever. Pick one, two, or three of those and create a mastery level understanding of them.
Yeah.
But also understand the results, the typical results of those levers before mm-hmm. you get into them. Because I think what people will do is they'll start doing like cold calling, FSBOs and stuff, and they'll have this idea of what it should return. Yeah. But if you look at it statistically, like the statistics and what you have to do to generate a deal through that is really, you got to go through a lot of crap.
Yeah.
Right. And then you finally get it. Same thing with cold calling, right? Or internet leads. You got to have 100 conversations with those people to get, you know, 2 appointments, and of the 2 appointments, one's going to sign. Like mm-hmm. those are very, very low percentages. Yeah. But if you understand that going in to the process, you understand what the industry standard is, the percentages of conversion, then you start to understand, am I winning or am I losing? Am I on par or am I behind?
Yeah.
Right? And people don't realize that. They just go in and say, I'm going to do this for 2 weeks and be rich. It's like, oh, man.
And then they do it for a week.
Well,
yeah. and it's especially depending on the sourcing. You get someone to go call FSBOs or expireds, they might not even last a day. I mean,
oh, man. Yeah.
FSBOs eat their young. I mean, we all know that. but it's true. I think especially for me, if I was starting out in this business and I would have focused on one of those, I probably would still not be in this business. It can break someone really quickly, and there's people out there that are much more skilled and have a lot tougher skin that succeed. And I think what I don't want people to hear us saying is that those things don't work. Because they most certainly work, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's you have to stay with them. And with like the internet lead stuff, if you're converting those at a 3-5% ratio, you're doing really well.
It also means that you're failing at a 95-97% ratio.
Right. But I think people call the first 10, they're like, this doesn't work, right? It's like when people go to their first open house and they're like, no one came through. Doesn't work. I'm going to stop doing open houses, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the consistency of doing that same thing time over task over time,
mm-hmm.
and then the results will come, right? Yeah. And I think that the frustrating thing about real estate, and also the thing I love about real estate, is there is no instant gratification, right? Everything that you do today will typically not impact you for another 60, 90 to 120 days, depending on what you're doing. And I think that we're very much so in the squirrel mindset where, how many people that run these large teams, their right-hand man, this job is nothing more than to prevent the leader of the team from chasing all these different squirrels, right?
Or prevent all the agents from chasing all of those squirrels.
Yeah, but and I think
accountability.
Yeah.
Man, you're exactly right. And I love, you know, we talk about the time over task over time a lot, especially you and I. And I don't think that people really understand that, because we're so tied to instant gratification in our society. Of course, with the role that social media and the internet has played in allowing us to have that instant gratification in so many areas of our life, that once you're out in society and you're into the business building world and you realize that, you know, these things, success is a sequential process, right? It is. You've got to participate in a specific mm-hmm. thing, you know, for a long enough time for that thing to build and eventually overflow into the results that you want it to create.
Yeah.
And we don't even have that kind of discipline at home. Right. I mean, I order DoorDash and I'm looking at my DoorDash app to see where the driver is every 3 minutes.
Right.
Right. It's like this. I'm the first one to admit that it's very easy to get off the path of this need to have everything right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have to recognize, again, back to self-awareness, how detrimental that can be to our own success in the real world.
Yeah.
It's scary because mm-hmm. you watch all these people just never reach their potential. Because they want their potential to fit in this really comfortable timeline for them.
Yep.
And it's usually a completely unrealistic timeline, right? I'm going to be rich in 30 days or 90 days.
Yeah.
And listen, it's always your fault, because you got to take responsibility for the decisions that you make in your life. But everything in society is built to tell us.
Man, it's so easy to blame others.
It's
though.
So easy to blame everybody else. It's even in like movies, man. Like, think about all the movies that I can't believe I'm going to go down this path, but think about every movie that we've ever watched. Like, everybody wants to be the hero
mm-hmm.
because the hero's, you know, amazing. And, you know, even like in movies where the hero's in a gunfight, it's just like, how in the hell are all these people shooting at the hero and they're all missing?
Yeah.
And then the hero's like, pop, 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 mm-hmm. and he's hitting everybody,
yeah.
you know, one shot. And it's just like, it's completely unrealistic. But we also don't, what we see is we see the character of the hero at the end of his success or at the prime of his career. And we don't, like, the movie's not nearly as interesting if we follow the journey mm-hmm. of failure.
Yeah.
You remember Bloodsport?
I
can't believe I'm saying this. You remember Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Yeah, I remember.
Like, basically every Jean-Claude Van Damme movie from the 80s was like him, like, leading with his ego, and he comes into a situation and he's like the baddest dude, and then he gets beat down, and then he has to go, oh my gosh, like, I've got to develop these skills. Most of those movies were great because it's like there was some self-awareness or some meditation, or there's some, like, at some point he had to turn inward. And then you got to see this journey, and now the journey was only maybe 20 minutes of the movie, but you saw failure, you saw him fail over and over and over again, and then slowly succeed, and then at the end, triumphant.
Yep.
Right? We don't see that a lot mm-hmm. anymore. We just see the end. We just see the hero. And it's the same in business. Like, you come across somebody who's successful, and you look at him, and you say, wow, like, that guy's got something special, and we hold him on a pedestal. Or that woman has just, I mean, whatever it is, when she says words, it's like gold comes out of her mouth, right?
Yeah.
And we put these people on a pedestal, and we completely devalue their journey.
Mm-hmm.
We say, you know, they were just born with it.
Yep.
Whatever, you know, whatever it is,
mom
put in any for
it.
Yeah, mom and dad handed it to all that stuff, and you just completely devalue their journey, all the failures that they've gone through. And I've been on the same journey that you were on, and some of our agents are on that same journey.
Yeah.
And we respect that journey. We respect the journey of lead generation and what it can create. But man, society has set some really poor expectations
mm-hmm.
for us.
Yep.
And I think that all the agents coming in that really want this industry to change the financial trajectory of their lives, change it even for the next generation of their family. At some point, you got to recognize the game that you're playing.
Yeah, and I think the saddest thing is we talked about that instant gratification. You brought up DoorDash. It's, you know, you get it right then and there, and then you look at the cost associated with it. It's substantial, right? And I think with agents, they also want that instant gratification. And sometimes to get that instant gratification, you go and you pay for some lead sources. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you may get a closing or two, but what are the costs associated with some of those lead sources? And then you're looking at the bottom line, and yeah, you're making 100%, but what did some of that stuff cost you? Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes we forget to have that conversation because it's so easy to look at just the volume. Like, yeah. Okay, I closed two, right?
The cost could, you know, by paying that or whatever it is, the cost could get you some more swings. Mm-hmm. But what if you're a terrible swinger in the first place? Well, that could go a number of different ways. Let's use the baseball analogy of being a terrible swinger just for, like, we'll keep this PG-13. But there's a lot of truth to that. And that's a part of our industry that, in my opinion, is a little rough as we prey on agents. We prey on their vulnerabilities and their fears and their reluctancies and their deep desire for this whole thing to be easier. Yeah. And people prey on that and understand. Now, listen, pray is probably a really strong word. Some people do pray. Some people are legitimately just trying to offer help. But the reality of it is there's a million coaching programs and there's a million different people telling you to do a million different things. And they're all promising you that they'll work as long as you give them a little money or a lot of money.
Well, I mean, that phone call I got this morning, if I could use more listings in Tempe. But seriously, like how often do you get those calls when you first started the industry? And if you don't know better,
you're like, of course I could.
That bill's racking up really quick.
Yeah. You give them a bunch of money and they say, we're going to change your world. But all they're really doing is giving you a swing. And if you don't have the skill to connect on that swing.
Yeah.
And that's where all of this falls apart is you've got to own your own responsibility, man. You've got to build your skill set. Mm-hmm. You've got to understand that in the beginning, what you lack in skill, you have to make up for an effort. Yep. So you're going to have to hack away, swing away way more. But during that time, when you're using effort to drive the thing, you've got to be going back to the practice field and gaining skill.
Yep.
You know, and we do that a lot in our business every single day with the morning huddle, and we're practicing our scripts and how to handle objections and how to communicate fairly and transparently and with the most, you know, honest and humble way that we can. Like, we're constantly working on our ability to communicate.
Yep.
And then we go out and we take swings. And over time, we start, you know, our batting average, when you start, it's zero, you know, or negative, right? And it starts to build towards 100, starts to build towards 200, it starts to build towards 300, you know, 350, 360. Uh-huh. Now, here's the thing. A lot of times we get caught up in lead generation or objection handling with the idea that we should be able to handle every objection every time. Mm-hmm. That's not realistic.
And in most cases, what ends up happening, if you only focus on that particular aspect of it, is inherently you start creating the objections, right? Yeah. If you're constantly hearing the same thing over and over and over, okay, there's probably some sort of common denominator, right? And I think it's funny when I'm hearing the same objection from the same person, but I'm not hearing it from anyone else. Mm-hmm. It's typically something that they're saying or something that they're doing because they have in their mind it's going to go a certain way. Just like that interview I had with you in the beginning, I thought the interview was going to go a certain way, and it probably would have gone a lot better if I just would have gone into it, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's sometimes what we fail with on the phone or in appointments sometimes at the very fundamental level. Obviously, when you've been in the industry and you've done this, it's not necessarily the case, but you will come across some standard stuff when you're out there.
Yeah, you've got to be able to handle all the basic objections, right? I got to talk to my spouse, and I'm working with another agent, like. There's some basic stuff here that you just have to be able to handle, and you should pour all of your energy and effort into developing the skill to handle those objections, and then put, you know, an equal amount of energy into really having a good grasp on how to articulate your value as a professional.
Well, and sometimes you can get a little bit rusty. I mean, it's you deal with and you focus on the I have another agent or my I have a friend that's in the business, and you're really good at it. And then 4 months later, the same objection comes up, and you just fall flat on your face because you forgot how to handle it. And I think a good example of this happened actually a few weeks ago, where our director of lead gen, which is an absolute, we don't use the word, but a monster on the phone. She sets a lot of appointments, and she went through a week where she was kind of down in the dumps and wasn't setting a lot of appointments, and was kind of putting this self-fulfilling prophecy that, is it something I'm doing? Is it something I'm saying? And then the next week, she actually came into the office for some script and objection handling with the team. She mm-hmm. acted as a client for the entire time. We went around the room a couple of times. She got on the phone, first call she made, set an appointment. She handled two objections, which was, I need to talk to my wife and I have an agent. Mm-hmm. And then that day ended with her setting, I think, 6 or 7 appointments, where the week before she said zero.
And then she did 3 the next day, and right. then she was off and running again.
Right.
And this is an extremely important conversation too, because you like, the idea of being a great lead generator doesn't mean that you're always a great lead mm-hmm. generator, right? 1 week you're really into it, you're communicating, you're positive, your mindset's good, then some life stuff happens and you're coming in and you're like, well, I gotta continue to communicate. That's my job. And you have a down week. Okay. Sometimes it's because you got a string of a lot of rejection, and sometimes it's self-inflicted. Like you're dealing with a personal low, or you're going through something. And the idea that you're just always on is not there. So, you know, one thing that we've paid a lot of attention to is, I think that being a great, consistent lead generator, which then leads to great and consistent business growth, mm-hmm. is equally as much about your desire to build your skill as it is about the environment and the people that you surround yourself with and share in that journey with.
Absolutely.
And if you're not in an environment that one, understands the value of lead generation, but also trains it and appreciates lead generation from a humble, authentic standpoint, and not just a hardcore sales standpoint, where you're building communication skills mm-hmm. and that you're encouraged to communicate with consistency and purpose, yeah. find that environment. Mm-hmm. Find it today. Find it right now, yep. because it's likely the thing that's holding you back. And it's okay to ask for that help. It's okay to say, I suck at this by myself. I am not able to do this by myself. Yeah. Guess what? Neither can I.
Yeah.
And I don't care. Like, I'm not going to wear I can do this by myself as a badge of honor, you know? And nobody in my family is going to wear this badge of honor that said, Brandon did it by himself at my funeral, right? Like, it's not going to be that way. This, like, we're tribal by nature, humans mm-hmm. are. And listen, there's some self-made people out there. They're lying to you, because there's people that have helped them, you know, in every facet of their life for the most part. But there's self-made people that find a way to generate this and do it on their own. I've never been one. I've always been a big component of collaborative environments with people that are going the same place I want to go, or who are already at the place that I want to be. And we devalue the heck out of mm-hmm. that, because we think that we have to do it on our own, or it's not good enough. Yeah. And that is contributing to the massive failure rate in this industry as much as anything else.
And it's only going to get worse.
Yeah.
That failure rate.
It is. It is absolutely making it worse. Here's what I want people to know about lead generation. It's not scary. I said earlier, like, what lead generation has always been to me is a commitment to communicating. And a commitment to communicating, you know, with great consistency and purpose. Yep. Like anything else, you said common denominator earlier. It's like, there's lots of coaching programs, there's lots of different things, and people plug into them and they go in and out and in and out. Listen, any one of these will work if you do it with consistency. Mm-hmm. If you commit to it and do it and hold yourself accountable, if you can't hold yourself accountable, recognize it early and often, and then find a situation that will hold you accountable. Yeah. People are terrified of accountability in
Absolutely.
Life.
Absolutely. Everyone wants it in the beginning.
Everyone thinks it's like, oh, yeah. And then they realize, like, oh, you meant I'm accountable to doing what I told you I would mm-hmm. do. And what they think is, like, accountability is going to be somebody else, like, holding my hand and pulling me along. That's not the case.
Yeah. Well, and I think it goes back to the simplest thing that we used to talk about all the time. You're having a bad, you know, mindset, you're having a bad month, you're having this. Lead generation really does solve all problems. Mm-hmm. Like, it really does. I mean, because when you're focusing on what you need to focus on, then those results are going to come. But everything comes with that lead measure, and then you see the results in that lag measure. Mm-hmm. And I think it's easy to get caught up in the lag measure sometimes and forget about the lead measure that got you there.
Or overvalue one of the lead measures, right? You got an appointment, right? And then you did a good job at the appointment. What's next?
Right? 3%.
What's next is I get my calculator out and I show my wife, like, I'm going to make this much. Yeah. And then that money never comes. I think you're spot on, man. It's submitting to the fact that if you want to grow your business, you're going to need to commit to ways to communicate with more people and do it more consistently. Mm-hmm. And this is where this value exchange of commission splits, and this is why teams, great teams, are thriving right now. That this whole teams conversation is a whole another conversation, because there's a lot of terribly run teams or teams that have little to no value, or, you know, just have one person, you know, at the top that you know, somehow attracts a bunch of people just because of their celebrity. But great teams can add massive leverage in these areas and allow you to build and succeed. And, you know, if you're joining a team, one of the first things that I would be looking for is accountability and standards. Because at some point, you've got to accept the very real fact that if you want to go somewhere and if you want to create real positive change in your life, you're going to likely need some accountability to creating that change.
Yeah, and I think that what we hear all the time is, if I don't get a closing, or I don't do this and I don't do this, then I'm gonna have to go get a job, right? If this doesn't work, I'm gonna have to go get a job. What are you doing right now?
Yeah, what are you doing right now? Yeah,
if you don't treat this like a career, yeah, it's not gonna be a career. And I think that, you know, even the most skilled agents that succeed at a high level, most of them really don't even put in a full 40 hours a week. So what does it look like if you put in a full 40 hours a week, mm-hmm, and you were to commit to a certain percentage of lead generation? I mean, we talked about it the other day. If you're being held accountable on the simplest level, let's say it's 100 contacts and 2 open houses a week, and you did that for 3 months, what would your business look like?
You say that like it's so simple, because to you and I, it is.
Yeah.
People get into that and they do it for 2 weeks and they don't have the results and they stop. Mm-hmm. And it just blows my mind, because it's so much easier for them to just settle back into a victim mentality around all of this stuff instead of taking responsibility. Yeah. That, like, hey, as much as this is about skill building, this is an equal amount of consistency. I've got to participate.
Yeah.
And you talk about the 40-hour work week. You're absolutely right. There are people that do stuff for 40 hours a week. Mm-hmm. There are very few real estate agents that work in their most influential zone for 40 hours a week. And the idea here is, what if you did? What if you could? Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing. You can't without leverage.
Nope.
And the moment you get caught up in the idea that you're going to have a stranglehold over all of your commission and you're never going to let that go, you've put a ceiling on your business.
We talked about it the other day. One of the agents on our team took 3 months off.
Yeah. And Kevin, he's been on the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. And while he was out of town for 3 months, deals were still getting closed. Mm-hmm. Things were still being lead generated too, because he was able to leverage and distance himself so he can enjoy time with his family. Mm-hmm. So I think it's not something you get into the business and you just think leverage is going to solve all your issues, because that's not what I'm saying here.
Yeah.
But when you get to a certain point, this business should get easier the longer you're in it, because then you're working more purposefully, smarter, not harder, and you can use leverage to kind of guide you along.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the value on, you know, a team is having that leverage.
Or a coach. Back.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Or you know, your first hire being accountability, whatever it is. I think people just glance over that idea just too quickly. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. Yeah. You know, going back to what we talked about in the beginning, like how people are attracted to the industry by the income opportunity and all, you know, very clearly driven out of the industry by the competition for that, you got to think of lead generation as participating in the competitive aspect of our industry. Mm-hmm. We're competing for attention constantly.
Yep.
That's what lead generation is. Whatever your lead generation strategy is that you choose to do, you're competing for the attention of those people.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a very competitive environment right now across the board.
Yep.
I mean, when you, any industry, any marketing platform, social media, television, radio, podcast, you're constantly competing for attention.
Yeah. Well, we always joke, you could throw a rock and hit an agent, or bounce off and hit another one.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's a great point because, you know, me starting in the industry, you think a simple Facebook post and blast it out to everybody. And then you see that your
friend buys
a house 2 months later and you get offended. You're like, I sent that post out. He should know I'm in the business. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a start, but that's not going to keep you top of mind. Right.
No.
You have to earn that trust and confidence because likely they were referred to somebody and there was some trust built there.
Uh-huh.
You constantly just need to stay in front of people.
Talk about this all the time. When does yes happen?
Right.
When people trust you.
Yep.
And trust is an earned thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be willing to earn that trust.
Yeah.
And you have to have a strategy for earning that mm-hmm. trust. And a lot of times having a strategy to earn that trust from any consumer, friend, family member, whoever you want to do business with is a communication strategy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That community, like we always talk about, listen, being liked or even loved is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be like, I'm a good person, people like me, and I have a real estate license, and that's enough. It's
yeah.
not. You have to be able to communicate your way from like and love to trust and confidence, and that is a process.
Yeah.
And in that process, there will be some rejection.
Mm-hmm.
Those rejections, it's absolutely your responsibility to be able to handle that. This brings us to mindset, right?
Yep.
Like mindset is such an important part of everything that we want in our lives, and it's no different here. I'm a big believer in mindset. Listen, it's not just reserved for gurus and books and clinics.
Yep.
Your mindset's absolutely going to impact the results that you're looking to create in your life. And I think all too often people get mindset confused with enthusiasm. Right?
Yeah.
Or excitement. Mindset is a self-disciplined practice,
mm-hmm.
right? And enthusiasm will carry you to your first setback, but your mindset will drive you through that setback.
Yeah.
Enthusiasm will carry you to failure and rejection, but mindset will push you through failure and rejection.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, success in any form is on the other side of that failure, other side of that rejection, other side of that discomfort.
Yeah.
And enthusiasm is not getting you through that part.
Yep.
So let's talk about how you started.
Uh-oh.
Because I think that your journey, if people knew about it and we highlighted these stories a little bit more, people would realize like, oh my goodness, like, yeah, anyone can do this,
yeah.
right? I mean, not anyone,
no,
but
yeah.
you have a very healthy mindset around some specific areas in your life that drive you. But when you first started, I want to tell this story and then I want you to elaborate on it because I always think that it's funny. We used to sit, you know, when you first started with us, we would sit around a table and we'd make all of our lead generation calls on speakerphone so that you could hear both sides of my conversation, both sides of Kyle's conversation, and it really accelerated your growth
yeah,
in a lot of ways.
Yeah, this was like a 5x5 room with a 3-foot round
yeah,
table.
Three guys in it.
meant for two people.
Yeah, right. But what I want to highlight throughout that time was just like you were – like most people, just unbelievably terrified to press the green button on your phone.
Yep.
And, you know, hit send. But what always cracked me up was you weren't confident yet. You didn't have the self-confidence in yourself and you weren't sure exactly what to say. You had some guidelines and we mm-hmm. were coaching you around it. But I remember you'd leave those voicemails, right? And you'd say the voicemail, this is Dalton Davis, BTG Real Estate, and blah, 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 and you'd go through it and it'd sound fine to me. And you'd freak out and you'd be going to the star button and the re-record.
It's pound three if you guys need to know. I still know. Yeah.
But walk us through that.
Because yeah.
And if you're okay, like being vulnerable with that situation, like what it meant to you, like what were the challenges that you were going through?
Yeah, I think the tough thing with that, you know, I wasn't really given an option. And I think the great thing about that room and us three sitting in there is it held us uberly accountable. It held me accountable to being there on time. It held me accountable to making those calls. And if I wasn't ready for a call, I'd get skipped. And is it really that big of a deal? No. But at the time, it was a big deal to get skipped, right? And I think for me, that held me uberly accountable. But I think at the same time, it obviously held you guys accountable, because if someone wasn't on time, you got locked out of the room, right? So that was the piece of just getting there. But actually getting in there and making the calls, that was a hard part for me.
What were you afraid of?
Rejection. I think there's a fear of rejection, right? You've known these people your entire life, especially for us and the way we run our business. The first calls you're making are your sphere calls, mm-hmm. right? And to me, to this day, those still are the hardest calls to make up front, right? Because there's a fear of rejection. What if they say no? What if they say they already have someone? What if this? Like, oh, mm-hmm. I haven't talked to him in forever. And I think that, you know, mindset, and I 100% agree with you, is a huge part of this business. But mindset is absolute BS if you're not going to go take action, right? So I think with just picking up the phone, I was terrible. I was like stuttering over the phone, and it 100% was fear of rejection. And obviously it got better over time, but in the beginning, it's, I think, just like anything else, your first open house, it's a little scary to ask for that contact information right off the bat, because there's that fear of rejection, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, constantly making those calls time over time, I started seeing results of what was working and what wasn't working. And I think hearing you guys on the phone and then hearing myself and critiquing myself, and I was young at the time, so I had the mindset that none of my friends are going to be buying houses or anything, and oh, I have some friends out of state, and I was just calling people, and I was calling ex-girlfriends, I was calling anyone and everyone. And
well, that's what I liked about, that's the part that I saw in you that was, that always made me excited, is because you had some things that you were willing to do that showed that, okay, you might have a lot of self-doubt right now,
mm-hmm.
and you might not be very confident, and you might not even be sure, what the heck am I going to say when I talk to these people? Although you've got a script and you've got some directables there, and you kind of know where you want to take them.
Yeah.
But the reality of it is you have very, very little experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a terrifying place to be in, especially when you're sitting in the room with two other people who have a great deal of experience.
Yeah.
But you showed up. Like all the time.
Every day.
Like you showed up every day. And no matter how bad it was, and we'd give you a hard time, you know, with love, of course. You know, I've always subscribed to the idea, if you're going to train people hard, you got to love them hard too. And, you know, you responded really, really well to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, just showing up is such a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think people understand, like, just showing up is really half the battle sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And going through the motions. And I think one of the things that you know, you mentioned there briefly, and I want to highlight this, is from my standpoint and from Kyle's standpoint, I know he agrees with this as well, is during that time when we're sitting there and we're lead generating, you're the terrified one in the room, right? You're terrified of just making the calls. You're extremely uncomfortable. You've got a lot of self-doubt and low confidence. That it doesn't help that you're around two other people that are just.
And that's something I always used to tell you guys. I'm never going to be able to sound like that, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to be so much better once I have a little bit more confidence.
Yeah,
once I know
stories.
More,
yeah.
I'll be able to start closing houses. Once I know more, once I get more confident.
This is why I want to talk about environment yet again, and coaching and mentorship, the right coaching and the right mentorship. Just because it says coaching or mentorship doesn't mean that it has the value that you need. Like this, you got to evaluate those situations for what they are. But here's what happens in those environments. When you get yourself in a collaborative environment, whatever side of the fence you're on, if you're on your side of the fence in that moment where you had low self-doubt and it was an intimidating journey,
mm-hmm.
for you, you're hearing us do it at a high level. But you know what else you're hearing? You're hearing us get rejected,
yep.
constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And you're starting to go, oh, wait a minute. Everybody gets rejected.
Well, you know what the hilarious thing part about this whole thing was? You guys were calling leads, right?
Mm-hmm.
You call someone from an open house and you're like, hi, this is Brandon Tracy. And they're like, oh, hey, Brandon.
Right.
They're not excited.
Right.
I'm calling Sphere. They're happy to hear from me. Right. Like these are friends. These are family. They want to see you succeed.
Right.
But deep down, there's that fear of rejection. Right. And I think in the beginning, it was a lot harder than it was towards the end, because you start to realize these people want to see you succeed. They want to see you do well. Maybe they're not going to be the ones that buy or sell a house with you, but they're still rooting for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that honestly probably is part of the only reason I'm still in this business was that little room. And I don't think that many people are ever going to be able to experience something like that. But
they can.
They can, yeah. Right?
They just have to make that choice on their environment.
And we started really small. We started where we had an office, but we couldn't sit in there really lead generate. So that was just for admin. I think at the time we maybe had one person, mm-hmm. right? And we went in there, we'd make calls because we knew as soon as we went in there, 9 to noon, we were calling, right?
I think it's important to point out too that we weren't in there making cold calls, right? I mean, sometimes they were. We committed
very
to
rarely.
A few different levers, but what we were really focused on was our database and creating referrals and mm-hmm. following up with open houses. And, you know, of course we did have leads and internet leads, but the, you know, 80% of our business was database created through, you know, our own sphere of influence or MET database or open houses, the influential zone, the face-to-face zone.
Yeah.
And we're constantly in that. Here's another thing, man. If you're a team leader or if you're someone who wants to lead, teach as much as you possibly can. Teach what you do well. Because what happens and what happened to us in that moment by teaching you was when you teach somebody else, you want to teach them the good habits. And you really start to become self-aware of your bad habits because you don't want to hand those down.
Yeah.
And teaching creates mastery. That whole process made me exponentially better at not only leading but communicating what I thought was valuable in our industry and how to get you to think, but it also created, it also made me a better lead generator. Mm-hmm. It made me more skilled on the phone. It made me make more dials because I was accountable to showing you how it was supposed to go.
It's funny how that works.
It was a two-way street the whole time. And that's what I want people to really understand about leadership. There's a big difference between being a boss, being a manager, and being a leader. Like, leadership doesn't mean that you're always first. Leadership just means I'm committed to showing you the right way. Mm-hmm. I'm committed to showing you the way that this has to do. And at first, I'm going to show you how to do it. And I'm going to perform. And I'm going to show you that it can be done, right? I do. And you're going to watch. And then we're going to do it together. We're going to move to the we do zone. And we're going to do it together. And then eventually, we're going to move from the we do zone to the you do zone.
Yeah.
And that is where you now can take that role on and each one teach one. Now you can teach the next person how to do it. Find that environment.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know where it is, find it. Make it your absolute goal in the next 24 hours to find an environment that functions just like that.
Well, and that's the one thing I love that Ben Kinney says. If you want to make $1 million,
teach 10 people
how to make 100,000.
Yeah.
Right? And it is so true. And I think, flashing back to that little room, in the beginning, you want to get up and you want to walk around on the phone, kind of distance yourself because everybody's listening to what you're saying. Kyle and Brandon know exactly what I'm supposed to say. What if I don't say the right thing? What if I fail? It's one of the most important things that stuck with me and sticks to me this day that I pass along is it's okay to suck, right?
We give you
permission to suck. Mm-hmm. Like, whether if it's open houses on these calls, you just have to do it. You have to start somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we forget when we get into this business, we signed up for this. We're entrepreneurs, right?
Exactly. Like,
and your database is the only thing that you have, right? The cleaner you can get that, the better you can communicate to it, the easier this business is going to get the longer that you're in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you nailed it, man. You nailed it. We talk about this a lot. Database is your only asset.
Mm-hmm.
And how well you communicate with that database determines the value of that asset.
Yep.
So if you're not communicating with that database purposely, intentionally, and consistently, you're devaluing your own asset. And again, that asset is the only asset that you own as an entrepreneur in this business.
Yeah.
All right? We don't own the houses that we sell. The sellers own that.
That'd be nice.
Literally, the only thing of value that we own in our business is that database.
Yep.
And it's the foundation of everything that you will build your business on. I say this all the time when we teach these database classes and our 8 steps class, and I implore people to understand the value of the contact information, how it's inputted, mm-hmm. how it's communicated with, how many people are in there. That platform is either going to determine your success in this business, or it's going to be the glaringly obvious reason that you got chewed up and spit out like the other 95%.
And the sooner and more effective you do it, the better off you're going to be, right?
If you do it like, oh my goodness, if I could go back and do it the right way the first time. Because you remember, even back when we were floundering around really trying to find our identity around database, we had to scrub our database like every 6 months.
Oh my gosh.
Because it was chaotic. We were just throwing stuff in. It was so chaos. And then we'd have to circle back and go, man, we got to clean this up.
And even to this day, I'm not uberly vocal about it, but I go and I scrub my database. I go from A to Z. I make sure everybody's on a plan. I make sure that there's a proper tags. And you know, I'm making sure that I have email addresses. I'm making sure that I have home addresses, because you can't really effectively communicate some of these plans that we build out. All the plans are great, but they don't work if you don't have the right pieces in there. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that's a big piece of it, especially if you're starting out in the business or you've been in the business for a decade or more. The cleaner your database is, the better off you're going to be.
Yeah. And how those people enter your database is critical, right? A lot of people just put people into a database and throw them on some email campaign and they wonder why, you know, why am I not rich? I got, you know, 10,000 people in my database and I'm only selling, you know, 12 homes a year.
Yeah. Welcome to my open house. If you could please sign in for security purposes for the seller.
Right.
Promise we're not going to spam you. And then as soon as they leave, you put them on a drip campaign.
Yeah.
What kind of trust and result is that going to really get you towards the end of the day? You pretty much just lied to him, and then you're expecting a closing.
Exactly.
Right.
And you nailed it. Like, and that's why we really drive home this 8 powerful steps class that we do. And that's a strategy that we utilize in our business, because how people go into the database is going to determine how effective those communication plans produce results for you going forward. So if you put those people into the database on a very specific communication plan that is meant to build some trust and confidence and help them understand that you're here to earn the right, you know, to be a professional resource for them. I'm not just here to sell or help you sell your house or buy your house when you're ready. I'm here to earn the right to be a professional resource for you. I'm here to help you with due diligence. I'm here to be a professional real estate agent. And I realize that the natural conclusion of being that professional will be to help you purchase or sell your home. But I've got to earn that. And we've completely missed that part of this journey. And that's why people are failing and they're not getting clients, is because they're not committed to the journey. They're not committed to the idea of communicating their desire to help. They're only communicating their desire to sell. And those two things are very different in a relationship-based business, where we need to earn trust and confidence in the very people that look us in the eye. We have to be willing to do that.
Well, and if you're not doing it, someone else is. Right?
Not a lot.
But if someone else gets the opportunity, they're going to.
And that's the competition, right? Here's the cool thing about, like, We're in a competitive environment, right? We can agree that especially if you're in Phoenix, and we're involved in other market centers, you know, throughout the nation, and we're kind of clued into those. But you know, I think Phoenix is very unique. Not to say that other market center or markets aren't competitive, because they absolutely are. But boy, is this a unique situation. Everything starts here in Phoenix.
Phoenix is a pop-up shop for any.
There's a new battle being fought on the real estate war front constantly around here, but. You know, this competition, it's very real, but it's not that skilled. And what I mean by that is, are there ridiculously skilled people doing amazing things in real estate, and especially here in our valley? Absolutely, 100%, undeniably true. But here's the reality of it. You know how much it takes to be in the top 1% of real estate sales?
I mean, if you...
Not a lot.
I don't know. I look on Facebook. Seems like everyone is.
On Facebook, everybody is. But in reality, very, very few people are.
No, absolutely.
So, and even once you get to that, you know, top 1 to 3% of real estate agents, like 97% of those agents out there, like, those are the, like, doing very basic fundamentals and communicating like a basic professional helps you win all of them. That, I mean, that's easy. Oftentimes, here's a secret. Here's how you beat 95% of agents. Answer your phone.
Yeah.
Okay, so is that competition?
Have a voicemail box set up.
Right, have a voicemail box. Yeah. Like, return phone calls, right? Respond to emails. Boom, okay. Now you've won against 95%. Your real competition is in the top 5%.
Yeah.
And actually, if we're getting really down to it, you're the most intimidating competition exists in the top 0.5 or less percent. Right. So when we talk about competitiveness of this business, I think that it's also important to say, if you show up every day and you answer your phone, you do some of the really, really basic stuff, you can find success. It's probably not going to be enough to keep you in the business.
No.
But you're going to find some. And then it's like, okay, now how do I compete with the next level? Okay, I'm up from JV. I'm playing varsity now. Yep. Now I want to go D1, right? And then you're going to go from D1. You're going to want to go pro. Mm-hmm. And each one of those levels of competition is going to require you to build a skill set, become more consistent, be more efficient, and learn how to utilize your leverage. Mm-hmm. And it's really that simple. Certainly not easy, but it really is that simple.
Yeah, no, it really is. I think in our training manual, one of the first thing in there is 10 things that require zero talent, right? Yeah. And it's showing up.
Showing up on time.
Giving effort.
Can we say the whole thing?
We can say it.
Showing up on time.
Yeah. Giving effort. Like it starts at such a basic level. And I understand when it comes to things like open houses, right? It seems simple, and the simple things aren't always easy. Mm-hmm. But part of it is just giving effort. And for me, I was absolutely terrible on the phone. I was nervous in meetings. Like I was not the ideal candidate to be a real estate agent if you were going to go pick someone out of a room after an interview and looking at...
Not on the surface,
mm-hmm. right? But, you know, growing up, I grew up in a very competitive family. Sports was a big part of our upbringing. My sisters all played at a very high collegiate level. I was never the biggest. Absolutely. I'm only 5'6". So you guys can't see me. And I wasn't the strongest. I wasn't the fastest, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in every sport, I was always written off in the beginning because of that particular mm-hmm. instance. By the end of training, I was always a starter. And it was nothing more than me showing up early, putting in the effort, staying late, and constantly working on the craft. And I think that's kind of goes back to how I've succeeded in real estate, is just showing up. It consistency, time over time, and just doing what you need to do. If you realistically just show up and you're calling from 11 or 9 to 11, 5 days a week, you're going to get results. I mean, we joke about a guy in our office, the patron saint of Ned. You can go sit open houses and, you know, you could be terrible. You're going to get someone that eventually is going to walk through and they're going to be like, I'd like to buy this house. Or I'm in the market right now. And then it's going to click. And sometimes you need those simple wins to succeed. But I think just putting in the effort and doing some of those things that require zero talent, it's not going to be enough to keep you in the business, but it's going to be enough to kind of get you started.
Yeah, right? It's going to help. It's going to create your foundation.
Right.
What you just described, man, is what I'm always trying to help people understand, is what you bring to the table matters. Like, there's not a brokerage out there that's going to fix your problems. There's not a team out there that's going to fix your problems. Mm-hmm. There's not a coaching program nope. out there. There's not a lead source out there that's going to fix your problems.
Mm-mm.
Because you go through all of those, and you said this earlier, there's a common denominator, and that common denominator is you. And eventually you got to look yourself in the mirror and take responsibility for the results that you're creating in your life. And oftentimes, more often than not, the missing ingredient is, it's not whether or not you're working. You feel like you're working, but are you working with intention?
Yep.
And I don't even know that people really understand, like, well, what does that mean? I show up every day. Yeah, you show up. But are you showing up and then working with intention?
Yeah.
That's the difference between somebody that comes in a call morning and makes two calls and someone that makes 30. That's the difference between somebody that does one open house a week, or I'm sorry, a month, and the person that does two a week.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that does two a week, if they're not creating the results that they want and they understand the business and they understand their responsibility to creating their own business, they're not looking outside of that process to solve their problems. They're saying, I'm not getting enough with two. I'm going to bump it to three.
Yep.
Or whatever lever you're at, mm-hmm. right? If you're calling FSBOs and you're making 100 dials a day and you're not getting the results, okay, it's time to do 200. Yeah. Like, eventually you've got to take responsibility.
Absolutely.
But what we do is we get into this victim mode, and we're salespeople, so we're super good at selling ourselves stories about why nothing's our fault.
Man, some of us are really good at even selling our coaches.
Yeah, exactly. I had to say that to my coach. Like, just whatever you do, don't let me sell you my stories.
Nope.
Because I'm really good at
mm-hmm.
it. I'm really good at selling my stories. And I need you to, like, hold the mirror up and say, cool story, bro.
Yeah.
Now let's talk the reality.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think that that kind of there's in my opinion, there's like two sides of the victim coin. One side is the very obvious victim. Terrible mindset shows up in their body language, shows up in their actual verbal language. Nothing's ever their fault. They're always a victim to circumstance or relationship or whatever it is. But there's the other side that's a little bit more silent, mm-hmm. right? That side is just like, you know, they're not outwardly projecting this victim mentality, but they're inwardly owning a victim mentality.
Yep.
And that doesn't, it's not a bad thing. It just means like there's some stuff going on in there and you've got to let that story go. Mm-hmm. Like you've got to get down some sort of self-awareness path or some self, you know, development and really understand that that story that you're telling yourself, that you're holding on from childhood or from a terrible event or from whatever it is, like it's now your responsibility to change the narrative of that story. Or at the very least, close the chapter and start writing the new one. Mm-hmm. Start writing the story of the hero of your life.
Yeah. When's it finally going to change for you?
Yeah.
Right.
When is that change going to happen? Mm-hmm. And understanding that that change is going to happen because of something that you do.
Yeah.
Not because of something that someone's done to you or somebody's given you something or you finally found the easy button. Just embrace the suck. Mm-hmm. Embrace the process. Absolutely. And the journey, because every successful person or every person that you look up to and say, I want to be where they are or I want to do what they do, there was a journey. And that journey was likely riddled with failure and self-doubt
yeah.
and sleepless nights and long work days until they got to that point.
I think I probably embraced the suck a little bit harder than some should. But I think it's one of those things, like, you know, when you're getting into something, you almost have to kind of obsess about it. Like, I was always a really bad time blocker, scheduler, organization. And then you obsess about it. And you go buy yourself a notebook. You get on your Google Calendar. You're putting everything on there. And then eventually, it just becomes the norm, mm-hmm. right?
That's what you do.
And lead generation is the same thing. It just needs to be a part of your schedule. If it's not in your schedule, it's not going to happen. Just like open houses. If you're not planning your open house for the week, Thursday is going to roll around. You're not going to do an open house, right?
That's, yeah. Or you're going to throw together some half-butted version of it. Right. See how I kept that PG-13
yeah,
right there
that.
On the
that
fly?
That was good. Yeah, we talked about that. But yeah, no, I think it all boils down to just being consistent. And I think that was the big thing for me, was just constantly showing up and making those calls. And I was not good at them in the beginning by any means. But it's something that's developed, and I've obsessed about it. I've taken notes on what worked well on that call, what didn't, mm-hmm. where did it go wrong? Where did I see the body language change when I was talking to this person in an open house? Do I maybe need to change this part of the script? You know, even when we're talking about the buyer consultation, it's, you know, we have our one of three things. And the third thing is in some instances, I decide not to work with certain individuals. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I decided to do that is if I felt like I couldn't meet and exceed all your expectations, I'd rather turn you down now. Right. Does that
rather
sound
than
fair?
Let you down.
Right. No. Yeah. And the big one there is, you know, there's things we tweaked, you know, there's mm-hmm. let you down, or instead of individuals, you know, before I was saying people, and it's like, oh, that don't sound good. Right. So it's you constantly need to be honing this craft in and changing things and working on it. And I think for me, the best thing that happened to me was sitting in that room, making the calls, and honestly making those fear calls first. They mm-hmm. are absolutely terrifying. But if you can make those calls, you can make anything.
If you
meet someone at an open house, that call's a piece of cake after you've called ex-girlfriends in your first week in the business, right? It really is.
That was ballsy.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that really never goes away for some folks. Like, we have people join the team all the time that have been in the business and succeeded at a pretty high level. And they say, hey, I met this person in an open house, and I'm kind of nervous to call them. It's like, okay, when'd you meet them? It's Saturday. Okay, it's Tuesday,
yeah.
right? Like, let's pick up the phone and make the call. And if you don't want to make the call, let's have somebody else make the call. Like, you constantly just need to be moving the needle forward and finding mm-hmm. what's working and what's not working. And I think that's been the big piece of not only my success, but the success of the team, is just being overly analytical on, you know, what's working and what's not working.
Well, I think you said something there that really kind of triggered something in me, is you know, when you're lead generating and you're doing these things, and are you just doing the task, or are you evaluating your performance in the task?
Mm-hmm.
And that's like something that you and I and we've tried to really interject into our business, is that, you know, when you're doing something, it's not just about doing it. So for example, it's not just about doing the phone call or doing the open house or doing the consultation. It's about evaluating the results that you got from that phone call and determining, should I try something new? I think all too often, and listen, when I say try something new, I don't mean a different strategy. I mean, should I change my language? Should I evaluate what I'm saying, how I'm saying it, to create a different result? Now, what happens is people start getting down this path and they get this idea that lead generation has to look one specific way all the time, and they're working to bend the will of the consumer to what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
instead of evaluating what they're doing to help the consumer say yes, help the client say yes, help the person say yes, give them show them the path you want
yep.
them to walk down.
Yeah,
right.
And I think that's a good point, because, you know, you talk about scripts or certainly generation tactics, and something's not working. Well, let's just try something different, right? No,
yeah.
No. Stick with what you're doing, make a 1 degree shift, and see what that does. Sometimes it's all it takes is a 1 degree shift to change a certain way you're asking a question for it to finally click,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think that's something that we've found over time. Definitely it's not something you figure out overnight, but, you know, I failed in the beginning, and, you know, whether if it was moving into a lead buyer specialist role or where I'm at now as a director of sales, managing a team of salespeople.
A team of lead generators.
A team yeah. of lead generators, right?
Right?
And who would have thought that the person that could barely pick up the phone, push the button, and not even talk to someone, was struggling leaving voicemails, is leading a large team of highly producing agents. And I think it's one of those things. I've obsessed myself with it over time, mm-hmm. and I've honed in the craft, and I've continued to make those 1 degree shifts over time. And it's consistency. I knew that I needed to make 25 contacts a day. And for every 25 contacts, I would get 1 to 2 appointments. And then it's, you know, you're taking it down to the base level and just like really getting in tune with what you're doing. And I think the other big thing that we miss here is we talk about lead generation, right? Lead generation is not picking up the phone, making 2 calls, and then taking a little break and getting on Facebook, and then making another call, and then jumping on your email, and, you know, responding to a counter. No, it's, there's a reason you get 24 to 48 hours for every offer and every counter, mm-hmm. right?
Time blocking,
mm-hmm. right? There's no emergency in real estate. And that's something that we realize, that there really is no emergency. Yes, there's going to be the one thing that, you know, pops up that maybe is an emergency. But for the most part, there is absolutely no emergency. You should be sticking to a lead generation. And I think when we talk about lead generation, it's very loosely kind of thrown around. You need to be very intentional and very purposeful on what you're doing. It needs to be very...
it's the most important thing that you do.
Yeah.
You should protect that time, mm-hmm. and make sure that you're consistent. We're back to the environment,
yeah.
and the conversation about environment and leverage. Those two things can help you stay in your most influential activities.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, whether you like it or not, as an agent, we're going to say lead generation again, but I want to reiterate the fact that in this case, what we're talking about when it comes to lead generation is the commitment to communicating with consistency and purpose, no matter what lever that you're committed to. But that leverage and that accountability, whatever that environment is, needs to be able to support you being able to stay in that activity with consistency, you know, whether it's every day or every morning, whatever the time block is. You should feel confident that I'm going to stay in here because the most important thing that I can do today for myself, my business, my family, my future is find the next person I'm going to work with. And everybody that I'm currently working with now is being taken care of by my team, my staff, or I'm going to be able to communicate with them after 11:30, whatever it is. But that's what bringing purpose is to the business.
Mm-hmm.
You got to own that stuff.
Yeah.
And you have to understand that it has value. And you do, like you said, you do have to understand that there are no emergencies in real estate. There's emotional bursts,
yeah,
but there are no emergencies.
Well, and especially when you get to a different level in real estate, you'll have buyers that want to go out and view a property and they want to look at 9 o'clock. That's the other piece of utilizing your leverage, right? It's more important to me to go find one or two potential buyers and sellers than to go out and show that one person that's going to be that 3% in 30 days. Leverage that out to someone else to do so you can focus on getting to the next level. And I think that's where
I already did the math on my calculator for 3%. Right? Yeah. I can't do it for less, right?
Yeah.
It's small-minded. Mm-hmm. We got just a few minutes left here, and I want to touch on a couple of things that were just fun things that we did throughout the process and how we held each other accountable in the early stages and really just the early stages of how we created our environment and our culture, although it looks very, very different now. We were talking about this before the podcast started. We started at a specific time lead generating every day, right? Yep. It was like 8:45 back in the day.
I think it was like 8:30.
Yeah. But like we used to lock the door on each other if we weren't on time.
Yeah.
And then we got to the point where we'd boo each other when we didn't come
in.
Well,
we had nicknames. He was Bare Minimum Brandon.
Bare Minimum Brandon. If I showed up late, I had accountability from you and for Kyle, and I'd walk through that door. Well, eventually once it got locked, you had to knock. Yeah. And then someone had to come open the door for you, and then, you know, lovingly we would boo each other, like, boo, no. Bare Minimum Brandon, Bare Minimum Bates, Bare Minimum Dalton.
Yeah, however, I never had a Bare Minimum because I didn't have a B in my name, so you guys never got to say anything.
But, you know, listen, it was accountability, and we were kind of serious, but we were doing it with love.
Yep.
And, you know, I said this earlier in the podcast, accountability and coaching and all of that stuff, it's like training people hard. It's okay to love them hard, too. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to do those things, and you got to surround yourself by people who are willing to own it. You know, you're late. You're like, okay, I'm late. I'm accepting this, but I'm not going to make this a habit. I'm not going to do this again.
Yeah, absolutely.
We had fun, and we joke about things inside of our business, like trying to show people where the green button is.
Yeah.
And Jessica commented here on the live podcast feed, like, tell the listeners about Alexa playing the cricket sounds.
Yeah, the other day it got a little quiet. I mean, sometimes you have to get a little creative because walking around telling people where the green button is, they kind of get tired of hearing that. So, yeah, the other day it got a little bit quiet, you know, because it starts off really heavy. Everybody's calling, and then sometimes we had the monthly meeting the day before, and I think there's a little bit of a lull the day after that, and it was, you know, a few minutes of silence, people mm-hmm. maybe doing what they need to do, and I asked Alexa to play cricket noises, and everyone was like looking around like, what is going on here? So I think it needs to be done in good fun to hold people accountable. But I think for the other thing, it's very beneficial, right? Mm-hmm. I think for us in the beginning, that was like it was exciting to go in every morning to make those calls, right?
Yeah,
it was like fun.
It's a little bit of humor and fun in saying, hey, this is really important, mm-hmm. what we're doing, and we need to be accountable to it. And, you know, what we're always looking for, find other people who want to be accountable. Find an environment that's willing to hold you accountable, have some standards, train you to the standards, and normalize all those feelings that you're feeling when it comes to lead generation.
Yeah.
You know, as we wrap this up, there's a journey that is involved here. It starts usually with feelings of self-doubt. You know, I'm not good enough, and I don't know what my value is, and oh my gosh, what am I going to say? And that morphs into fear, you know, the fear of rejection. You know, we have a horrible relationship with rejection in our society. We talked about that. We've been set up to feel that way. And knowing that this process of self-discovery is normal, getting around other people who see it as normal too. Like, if you're scared of scripts and role plays, get around people who just think that it's a normal part mm-hmm. of their business. Because guess what? You're going to find out that there's no judgment at all. Like, everybody's what everybody's committed to is building their skill, because it's Absolutely. Important to them to build their skill because they really want to reach their mm-hmm. goals. And when you're in that environment with other people who want to do that, then all of a sudden those fears and those judgments start to subside a little bit.
Yeah.
And I love this. When you're in that environment, you hear other very skilled people get rejected.
Yeah.
And you see them go through highs and lows, and you go, this is normal. I just got to push through this.
Yeah.
That's what this is about.
Absolutely.
Success is on the other side of those feelings of discomfort, those feelings of fear and reluctancy and rejection. successes over there, and these people are constantly banging their head against the failure wall until they get through. I can do that.
Yeah.
I can do that because they're doing that.
Absolutely.
I can do that because my team's doing that. My squad's doing that. My brokerage is doing that. My tribe is doing that, and I'm part of this group.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things. You obviously can't be a millionaire with a minimum wage mindset, right?
Yeah.
And I think it kind of goes back to, there's a difference between lead generating and or someone that's just going to lead generate and someone that's like a lead generator, right? Mm-hmm. If you've never seen like someone in your office that you know is just every day and they're doing it, go sit down and watch them lead generate. Like that's what I'll do is I'll pull people and I'll say, hey, I just want you to sit here and I want you to watch what I'm doing. And I'll show them how to lead generate because it's
there's a cadence to it.
There is a cadence to it. It's a pattern, right? Like you're calling, you're putting your notes, you're going to the next one, right? You're not typing an email. You're not doing that. That's for afterwards, right? You just need to keep doing what you're gonna do, and you'd be amazed what it looks like to call from 9 to 11, and that's all you're doing, as opposed to just, you know, kind of going through the motions from 9 to 11 on what you can get done. And I think it's funny because there's people that bold 100's a thing, right? They do 100 contacts in one day, and then the next day they do 2, right? Mm-hmm. But what
the
does it
month.
Look like if you just do 20 a day, right?
Mm-hmm.
You'd be at 100 contacts.
What's it look like if you do 10 a day?
Right?
Like really focused on 10 a day. Heck, what if it was just 5?
Yeah.
But you owned it.
But you also need to see when you're winning and losing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think
the
evaluation process that was
about.
A big thing for us is, you know, starting with showing up on time. Are you winning? Are you losing?
Mm-hmm.
Is it your turn in the rotation to call? Did you win or did you lose, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many calls did you make at the end of the day? How many appointments did you get? How many buyers did you sign? How many listings? You need to know when you're winning and losing, because that's that lead measure we talked about. The lag measure is going to come with time, and we always talk about this. If you do the right thing, the right number of times, the right thing will happen, right?
The right result will happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, this was fantastic. So appreciate you for coming on, sharing a little bit of your journey. I almost feel like we didn't get far enough into some of the good juicy stuff.
We got the surface.
Here.
That's all we need to do, though. We don't need to go too deep on how bad I was in the beginning.
But it's fair to say you were bad, right? Like, really bad.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And that's also super normal.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's super normal. And that's what we want people to know is like, you can absolutely develop these skills. Just find people to enjoy the journey with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, seriously, enough of this solo business out here. Like, find some people that'll hold you accountable, enjoy the journey, go out there and change your life. That's really what you want.
Mm-hmm.
If you really want to go change your life, you want to change your financial trajectory, you want to have a legacy and all of these buzzwords that all 100% of agents do, but 97% fail. Like, if you really want that stuff and you want it to stop being lip service, take action.
Yeah.
Get into the right scenario, the right environment, own it.
Mm-hmm.
Own it. Dalton, thanks, brother.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm so happy to be in business with you, man. I really am. One more shout out to Magnus Title and Angela Kiernan, like such a ridiculous hustler. If you've got any questions or you want to partner with somebody like that that can legitimately help impact your business, send us a message at the Authentic Agent LLC website, or you can always direct message me on Facebook or Instagram. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to the Authentic Agent Podcast. We got two hosts next week in Kevin and Kyle, bringing you a little bit different flavor while I'm out for the week. So keep an eye out for that and go out there and create an excellent day. Bye-bye.